There are times when following in someone's footsteps requires us to fill very big shoes. That was true for Joshua, who took charge of Israel after the legendary Moses had stopped just short of ushering God's people into the Promised Land. Most of us will not be called to direct an entire nation, but in our own spheres of influence, we can all demonstrate courageous leadership. The title of our new four-part series at Northgate, Joshua's story will help us consider the integrity, strength, and reliance on God required to lead our lives and influence others. Let's take a listen.
We have been in this series called Courageous Leadership the last 3 weeks. This is the third week of it. And we've been looking at leadership through the lens of Joshua, through the book of Joshua, and what he was called to do as he led the Israelite people into the Promised Land. And I hope that you've been here for it. In case you haven't, let me give you the 30-second recap of the other ones. Week one, I encourage you to accept the job. God has called us all to be leaders. He's put us deliberately in places where we have influence, and we need to be bold and courageous, just like he told Joshua to be, and to step into the role that he has given us, or be strong and courageous would be the correct words. We need to do that and step into the leadership opportunities that God has given each of us. Last week, Pastor Vernie told you after you accept the job, you got to get to work, right? You got to roll your sleeves up, you got to dig in, you got to get to work. And he told you that courageous leaders rely on God. And I've been so excited about this third week, about this message, because I get to tell you to stay with it. Because if you heard Pastor Vern last week, he said, even though we're leading where God has called us and we're relying on him, we can expect obstacles and tests of our leadership. Now, you need to know that. Obstacles and tests, it doesn't mean that you aren't where God called you to be. It doesn't mean that you're not walking with God. It doesn't mean that you can, in fact, expect those when you are leading. It's going to happen. They're going to come. So don't be surprised when those challenges come. But that leads to what my main point is this morning, because when obstacles come, there's really two options. The first option is that obstacles can give you an excuse to quit. It can give you an excuse to quit, or it can give you an opportunity to endure. Those are really the only two options that it can give you. It can give you an excuse to quit. You can say, well, you know, I knew this wasn't going to be easy, and now this is my reason I'm going to leave. Or you can say, I knew this wasn't going to be easy, and now we're going to get after it. Now we're going to go. It's frequently been said that the only real difference between a stepping stone and a stumbling block is how we use them. They're the same thing. It's just how we approach it. Now, I'm not normally a quitter. That's not really my wiring, you know, and if you're wired for that way, I think God can help you through that. But I do have some things that I've quit. I quit golf, all right? It wasn't good for me. It did not bring out a good Christian side of me. I'm not good enough at it to play without getting incredibly frustrated and angry, and I don't like to feel that angry, so I quit golf. And I've seen golf around. She seems to be doing just fine without me. I'm doing really well without golf as well, but I had to quit golf. I had to put some distance between me and golf. And another thing that I quit is one time, one particular race, I quit. Now, I don't mean I sat down, like it wasn't that bad, but I quit running. Now, I've done a bunch of races, mostly 5Ks, because that's kind of a pleasant distance to run, like a little over 3 miles, some longer ones, some 10Ks. One time, though, I got it in my head and I signed up for a 10-mile race. It was the Metro 10, it's in Albion, it was Buffalo against Rochester, like, oh, this will be great. So I signed up for that. Now, a few things went wrong. Number one, when you're running a race, you want to train to the point where you know for sure you can run that distance. You feel very confident in that. I thought maybe I could run 10 miles. It's not a good way to come in. Number two, when I run at like 5:30 or 6 in the morning because God did not make my people for the sun, all right? Like, if you see somebody that looks like me, like, sun is not our friend. And so I would run early and get it out of the way. This race started at 10 o'clock, and it was in August. So it was hot, and it only got hotter as we went on. Third thing that went wrong was I was cruising through, felt pretty good for the first 6 miles. Said, when I get to mile 6, I got this little honey packet thing, you know, I'm going to take that. It gives you a little infusion of energy. It's like what you give somebody in a diabetic shock, but I was not. I was just running. So I get to that point, and I see the water station up ahead, and I take the honey, and I, you know, squeeze it all down. It's awful. It's hot, and I'm drinking, like, eating straight honey. But the water station's up there, so I grab the cup, and I keep running, and I throw the cup down, and it's Gatorade, not water. Now, don't try this, but Gatorade and honey on a really hot day will basically make, like, a paste in your mouth. And as soon as that happened, I was like, I'm done. Like, I'm done, right? I'm not going to survive this. So I kept going for a while. I get to just past the 8th mile. I'm on the Erie Canal, and I stop and I start walking. First and only time I'd ever done that in a race. And I just felt awful about myself. And, you know, I'm like trudging through, trying to muster up the strength to run to the end because I don't want to have to call for like a car or something. That would be even worse. And as I'm doing that, I'm walking through. And I think, man, you know what would be really painful right now? To see somebody that I really respect and want to respect me. And at that time, Pastor Vern came running up on my left side. Now, Pastor Vern will tell you that he is not a fast runner. I will tell you the speed he runs, he can run all day. And he had caught up to me, and all of a sudden I see him there. And I was like, oh, no. And he looks and he just goes, John. And he kept running. And he asked me, he's like, what should I have said? I was like, there's nothing you could have said. I mean, you could have said, like, see you on Sunday, loser, or something like that. That would have been, it could have been way worse, but I just felt like this overwhelming, like, Vern, I'm not a quitter. You know, like, I just wanted to yell down after him, and I just felt so bad because I quit. I quit, and I regret it to this day. It's almost 3 years since that race, and I still think about it way more often than I should. I should get rid of that shirt. Every time I wear the shirt from that race, I'm like, I'm a quitter. I'm a quitter. But I fear, here's what I fear, that some of the people here today are thinking about quitting things much more important. Thinking about quitting over enduring on races are things far more important than a race. Here's what I mean. People who are thinking about leaving a job that you need to stay in. God hasn't provided the next step. He hasn't showed you what to do. You would just be running from something, not towards something. You're thinking about leaving that job. People that are thinking about quitting your marriage. Your marriage has hit a hard spot. It's become a lot harder than you ever anticipated. Yeah, I know what I said in my vows, but I didn't expect this. And you're thinking about quitting your marriage or skipping out on their family. People who are thinking about quitting positive changes that they've been making to their health. You knew you needed to do it. You started to do it. Maybe you plateaued. Maybe things got difficult. Maybe your schedule's gotten more busy, and you're thinking about stopping that. People that are thinking about walking away from your faith. Walking away from God, walking away from the church, saying, you know, I don't know why I do this sometimes. Let's make Sunday a second Saturday and we'll just stay at home. Or people that are thinking about ending their own lives. I think that there are people in this sanctuary that are thinking about quitting things that we absolutely cannot quit. So it was a very publicized week for suicide, wasn't it, with Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain. It's been a lot of discussion about the power of that. And I'm sure there are many more examples here. We went around and talked about them, where we are encountering obstacles and we're looking at those obstacles as our reasons to quit when God has truly put in front of us an opportunity to endure. And we're going to look at Joshua chapter 6 as we talk about that. Now, last week, Pastor Vern told us that the Israelites, they'd come into the promised land, right? They started to get to work. They've been going through, they've been moving forward, and they started to take ground, and they're feeling pretty good. But then they encounter their first major obstacle, and that comes in the form of a city that they have to take, a very well-fortified city named Jericho. So we're going to look at Joshua chapter 6, called the Conquering Jericho. If you know, grew up in like flannel graph like me, you know some Jericho stuff and some Jericho songs. We're going to take a little bit different look at exactly what was going on with the Israelite army with this. Now it starts in verse 1, and always read this. You can, you know, cross-reference it while I'm doing it, or you can read it later. But in verse 1, it tells us that the walls were completely secured. It tells us no one's going in, no one's coming out. And they were doing this because they knew the Israelites were in the land and the Israelites were taking over things. So they had locked it down. They had fortified this strong city. And this Israelite army, I mean, this is just like a ragtag group of people. This isn't like one of the great armies of the Babylonian, Persian, or Roman empires that would come along later. They had no real way to attack a city as fortified as Jericho. And I'm sure that some of them had to think when they got to Jericho, when they saw it and they saw how locked down it was, like, well, we had a good run, didn't we, fellas? Like, this has been good. Maybe God can give us the whole promised land except Jericho. Like, we'll just take the rest of this. And that is the first reason right there why we choose quitting over enduring. The first reason why we choose quitting over enduring is that we don't see what is possible. We don't see what is possible. We look at an obstacle, we size up the problem, and we go, yeah, it's no good, we can't do that. And then we fail to see how God can help us overcome what is right in front of us. Even more than that, we fail to see how much God desperately wants us to overcome what is in front of us. And when we don't see what is possible, we don't see any reason to endure. If we don't see what God can do, we don't see why we need to keep going. So God wanted me to tell you today that God can still save your marriage. He can still save your marriage. It is not too late. He wanted me to tell you that he can rebuild and restore your faith. He can do that. He can heal the hurt and the brokenness that has caused you to think about harming yourself. And he needs you to see what is possible if you will turn a situation completely over to him. And if you will let him work in you and let him work through you, if you will see what is possible. I have a friend, and I used to go visit this friend in jail. He was deep in addiction, and that had been most of his life that had been an issue for him. And I would go, and I'd visit him. And I remember one time going, and we were talking about, you know, just he wanted to be done. He wanted to be done with that lifestyle. He wanted to move out and just live a normal life and be a contributing member of society. And he said to me at one point, he said, do you know how many people go from this to that? That are even clean and sober for a year. And I said, I don't know, what is it? He said, 11%. 11% of people ever go from where I'm sitting right now to where we're talking about, to be sober for even a year of their life. And I said, okay, well, it's possible then, right? I mean, it's not zero. It's not 0%. 11% somebody. Why don't you be one of the somebodies? Why don't we do that? Like, what can we do? Let's pray. Let's ask God to help you get to that point. And I'll tell you, I don't have to go see him in jail anymore because he comes here and he sees me every week. And last Monday, June 4th, he celebrated a year of sobriety, a year of being clean and sober because he turned his life absolutely. He turned his life and his situation over to God. He'd be the first to tell you, by the grace of God, he made it through that year, and by the grace of God, he's going to make it through the next 50 because he saw what was possible. He didn't just look at the obstacle that's right in front of him. And you guys, this is one of the reasons, this is one of the many reasons why we need to be in church every week. We need to learn about God. We need to hear about his faithfulness. We need to sing about his greatness. We need to hear what he's doing in other people's lives so that we can stay encouraged and we can see what is possible. We all need to be reminded of that because when we are, it elevates our perspective. And then we can see past the obstacles that are right in front of us when we look and we see what is possible with God. So what happened with the Israelites? They're facing this impossible situation. The Lord gives Joshua instructions of how they're going to do this. He says, see, I've delivered Jericho in your hands, along with its king and its fighting men, which is kind of funny because it didn't look like that at all. Like God says, see, and Joshua's like, no, I see a well-fortified city, but God wasn't looking at how things looked in that moment. He was looking at what was possible. So God says, this is how we're going to do it, Joshua. Now, Joshua's probably got some ideas, right? He's like, man, I can't wait. What are we going to do, God? Are we going to burn it down? Are we going to cut some, you know, go Braveheart, and we're going to cut some big trees and ram through. This is before Braveheart, but whatever. We're going to ram through the gates, right? Or maybe, you know, Old Testament God, he was into smiting, so maybe we'll just smite some people, like, right out of the way, right? You're going to Google smiting later. It's going to be great. And so instead, God says, march around the city once with all the armed men. And I picture Joshua, like, writing this down. He's like, all right, march around the city once, all the armed men. Got it. Okay, what's next? And God says, do that for 6 days. Joshua's like, six days. We're going to march around 6 days. Okay. And then God says, have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horns in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua's like, what? What are we going to do? And God continues. He says, then when you hear them sound a long blast of the trumpet, have the whole army give a loud shout, and then the wall of the city will collapse, and your army will go up, and everyone will go straight in. And Joshua's like, right, God. Hey, let's workshop some other ideas. Like, that's a good starting point. There's no bad ideas in a brainstorming session. But that's it. That's God's plan, right? He's like, we're going to do this. And that leads to the second reason why we choose quitting over enduring. The second reason is that we wouldn't have chosen the process. We would not have chosen for it to look like this. Joshua and the Israelites, this is not the way that they would have chosen to conquer Jericho. I mean, they know that God could have spoken and just, you know, made this gone in an instant, just completely removed this obstacle, the sound of his voice. But 1 Corinthians 3 says that the wisdom of the world is foolishness in God's sight. And so God devised a way to do this that would show his people that he was in control and that their best plan, no matter what they faced, was to rely fully on him. Here's what I know. The obstacles that you are facing are probably no different. If you had your way, you would choose for God to speak and just remove the obstacle like that. That's what you would choose, and I think that's totally reasonable. And we need to say that God can do that. Now, he rarely does, though. Why? Because I think he wants us to know he's in control, just like the Israelites, but he also wants us to know that our best plan, no matter what we are facing, is to fully rely on him. the challenges, the difficulties, the obstacles that we face in life, they feel different when we come from the perspective that what God wants the most for each and every one of us is for us to rely on Him and draw close to Him. That is what He wants more than anything else for all of us. He wants us to rely on Him. He wants us to draw close to Him. So when we face an obstacle with that perspective of saying, okay, God, how does this allow me to rely on You and draw close to You? And so Joshua, he gets the instructions from God. Now he knows the plan. And he calls the priests together and he tells them, take up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, have the seven priests go in front of it, gives them the whole thing. And he tells the army, let's advance, boys. We're going to take this city. We've got the armed guard going ahead of the Ark. But Joshua doesn't give them the full story yet. He doesn't lay out the whole thing. And I don't know, it's interesting why. I'm not going to answer it. I'm just going to ask a question and then let you think about it. Did he not think they'd buy into the plan? Did he not think they would endure what they needed to get through? We don't know, but he doesn't tell them. Instead, it says that when Joshua had spoken to the people, they get everything together, the trumpets, they go forward, they're blowing their trumpets, the Ark of the Lord Covenant is behind them, the armed guard marches ahead of the priest, and the rear guard there is coming behind the Ark, and the whole time it says trumpets are sounding. Now, I got little kids, so I was annoyed when I read that, right? I hope that they were playing a song. Like, I hope they were doing, like, a marching band song, and it wasn't just, like, indiscriminate noise, like a junior high band concert or something. If you're in junior high band, I'm sure it's way better than when I was. But when I was there, I just played notes loud. That's why I don't play any instruments anymore. But hopefully it was like some good music, right? And they were making it sound good. But they just keep sounding. And Joshua says to the army, don't say anything. Don't give a war cry. Don't raise your voices. Don't say a single word until I shout. But when I say to, shout. And so they get up, the Ark of the Lord, they carry it around the city, they circle it once. And I imagine that the guys, they're marching and they're just waiting for the command, right? He's going to say to shout, and we're going to shout, it's going to be great. And they're all ready and they go around the city and they get all the way around the city. And then they go back home and they return to camp and they spend the night there. I would have loved to be in the camp that night to hear what people were saying. Because you imagine them looking around and being like, that was awesome. One little part, we didn't conquer the city, right? Like, that was cool. Like, hey, all right, you go ask him. Joshua, was that like a warm-up lap? Like, what were we doing? Like, we stretched, like, we're good, you know? All right, we're ready. Like, what went wrong? We marched around the city and we didn't conquer it. And they come back and they just go back to the camp. And then the next morning, Joshua gets up and they do the whole thing over again. Seven priests and seven trumpets. They've got the Ark of the Lord in the rear guard. Whole time those trumpets are still playing. And on the second day, they marched around the city once, and then they returned to camp again. And they did this for 6 days. Now, I don't know about you. Maybe you're more patient than me. I'd like to think around the third or fourth day, I'd start to get impatient. Probably like day two, I would be like, Joshua, hey, man, good to see you. We told you, remember we said be strong and courageous? And you know how God's given us this land? We're not just going to walk around it, right? Like, God has given this to us. Let's take it. Let's stop being, you know, so weak about this. God has given us this land. It's ours. Let's take it. Let's be bold and let's lead aggressively like that. What are we waiting for? And don't forget, they had no idea how long this was going to go on. We know the end of the story. We know the numbers. They had no idea, but that is a very significant reason, again, of why we choose quitting over enduring. And that's because we wouldn't have chosen the process, but we can't perceive that we're making progress. We can't perceive that we're making progress. They didn't know if this was day 3 of 4. They didn't know if it was day 3 of 40, if it was day 3 of 400. They had no idea how long this was going to go on. Because if you know when things are going to end, if you have a finish line, then it becomes a little easier to say, okay, that's how far we got to go. We can do that. Sometimes I'll talk about our first pregnancy with my oldest daughter, Grace. And, you know, even in telling that story sometimes, I feel bad because what happened was, you know, you get married, you think, and then at this point, we'll have a kid. And then, you know, we got there, and it was like a year, and nothing had happened. So we had to start going to clinics, and we had to go and find out, you know, if we were going to be able to have kids and if all that stuff worked. And it was a year and a half. Now, when you tell that, I know people 10, 12, 15, 20 years on the road of infertility. But for us, at that point, we didn't know. If someone could have said, hey, on January 14th, 2010, you'll have a beautiful daughter born, you'll go on to have 2 more kids, beautiful, I would have been like, cool, all right, I can do that. That's good. I wasn't going to do anything anyway. Right? I'll just keep sleeping until we have kids. Would have been a great plan. God gave us an extra year and a half of sleep. But we didn't know what the finish line was. So it just felt like, well, man, maybe this is year one of 10 years of not having kids. Maybe we'll never be able to biologically have children. I would have suggested to God, how about when they march around, the first day, 1/7 of the wall falls off? That feels like a good idea, right? Like they march around, 1/7 comes down, next day a little bit more. Because by the time you get to day 6 and day 7, like day 7, you're like looking over the wall, right? Like we're coming one more round and you guys are in a lot of trouble. But he didn't do that. There was no idea of how much progress they were making or were not. If every time you put forward significant effort in your marriage, it was well-received and reciprocated by your spouse, you would probably be willing to put forth significant effort in your marriage much more often. If every time you stepped on the scale after a day of working out and eating well, you lost weight, it would make it a lot easier to work out and eat well again today. But it doesn't always work like that. Unfortunately, we don't always see the progress that we're making. And when we don't see that progress, it makes it so much harder to endure. But listen to me, those of you that are here today that don't feel like you're making any progress, I want you to know you can't walk away now. You can't quit now. You did not come this far to only come this far. You didn't. Stephen Furtick is one of my favorite pastors. He had a great message on Jericho. And he said about the Israelite army, he said, what if they had, you know, day 5, day 6, they had said, you know what, this is stupid. This is stupid. We're not making any progress anyway. Like, we're going to do this our own way, Joshua. And what if on day 6 they quit? And he gives the encouragement to say, don't stop on 6. Don't stop on 6 in your own life. Maybe you've been working hard to overcome these obstacles. Maybe you've been doing everything that you can to endure, but you're thinking, I just can't keep going like this. And why would I keep going? Because it's not having any impact anyway. I'm telling you that if you quit now, you may be stopping on 6. You may be just short of what you've been working for. You might not perceive it, but sometimes perception can be deceiving. Just before Christmas, I was at Wegmans with my youngest daughter, Emerson, and I just got her in the car and, you know, get there, and I start to back up, and just as I put it in reverse, guy pulls in next to me, and he starts to get out, and he has the door open, and all of a sudden, this guy dives back into his car. Grown man dove in his car. What happened? I was backing up, and he thought his car was still in drive. It was awesome. It was like the best thing. I was like, Emmy, let's go to a different parking spot and see if we can make this happen again. Because his perception was that his car was still moving, but perception can be very deceiving. His car was completely parked. Just because your progress isn't obvious does not mean that your faith is not working. Just because your progress isn't obvious doesn't mean that the process is not working. So don't quit now. Don't stop on 6. And the Israelites, they didn't stop on 6. Finally, the 7th day comes. They get up at daybreak. They march around the city 7 times in that manner. It wasn't just one more time the 7th day. The 7th day, they had to do it 7 times. God's really pushing them. But the 7th time around, the priests sound the trumpet, and Joshua finally gives that command to the army. He says, shout, because God has given us this city. And he gives them some very specific instructions about how it's all going to go down. And then in verse 20, we see finally it happens. The trumpets sounded, the army shouted, and at the sound of the trumpet, when the men gave a loud shout, the wall collapsed, so everyone charged straight in, and they took the city. It's exactly what God described to Joshua at the beginning of this chapter. And the army, they do exactly like Joshua told them. There's silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and those all go to the Lord's treasury. A Rahab, who you can read about in chapter 2 of this book, she and her family are spared. But other than that, every living thing in Jericho, young men, young women, old women, cattle, sheep, donkeys, everything is destroyed. They burn the city down and everything in it. They completely annihilate this city, this obstacle that just a little bit before stood in front of them as a powerful reminder of something they could not overcome. And the chapter ends with these words. It says, so the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the land. I mean, this was a resounding victory. This was a blowout of epic proportions. And it's one that had huge impacts in the land, not only for Joshua, but for the entire Israelite people. Because if they could obliterate Jericho like this, a city as strong and well-fortified as Jericho, if they could completely take them off the map, then what else could stand in their way? Now, if they had avoided the city, if they had said, we'll just conquer everything else. Those look like some pretty bad dudes. We're going to leave them, and we'll take the rest of the land. It's pretty big, right? We could spread out. This is good. If they had done that, or if they had just said, well, let's go take care of the easier places first, and then we'll come back and fight this hard battle at the end. If they had avoided it, it would not have had the same profound and lasting impact that the complete and utter destruction of Jericho had as that word went out among the people about what God had done through these people. And so our last reason of why we choose quitting over enduring is that we underestimate the payoff. We underestimate the payoff. We underestimate that if we can get through this dark and difficult stretch without harming ourselves, that God can heal us and that God can redeem that brokenness and that God can build a beautiful and wonderful life. We underestimate just how much we're going to need God, how much we're going to need our faith and need the church down the road when we encounter a crisis. We underestimate how good we will feel and how good we'll feel about ourselves when we finally get physically healthy. Or we underestimate the beauty and joy of a marriage that's gone through good times and has gone through bad times but has done it together. The beauty of sitting there watching the sunset with someone that has known you and loved you for most of your life. We underestimate the payoff. And that's a reason why we choose to quit rather than endure. A couple of years ago, I remember talking to Mark Logan, our operations director, and they had just come back. He and his wife, Ruth, had just come back from a trip to North Carolina to visit their daughter and her husband. And Mark said, he was like, it was so great. Goes on the way down, he goes, we didn't turn music on. We didn't put like an audiobook in. He said, we talked the entire trip down. And he's like, and it wasn't like superficial talking. It was like about our lives and about, you know, how we've seen God at work and our kids and everything that's going on. And he said, it was just incredible. And I thought, I got to go back and I got to tell the young guys because I know it's, you know, that's us. We were young once. And he said, I know it's a tough stage of life that you're in right now with little kids and it's tiring and it's stressful and somebody's always going to the doctor and this stuff's happening. He said, but I want you guys to put in the work that you have to, not just to get through, but to have a strong marriage so that you can get to this spot in life where we are and just see the benefit of that. And he was saying, don't underestimate the payoff for working hard in your marriage now so you can get to that spot. And God, through the author of Hebrews, he gives us the exact same encouragement in Hebrews 10:36. And this would be a wonderful verse for you to memorize. It says, you need to persevere. Why? So that when you have done the will of God, you will receive what he has promised. The obstacles that you're facing right now, they can easily become your excuse to quit. They can. I mean, we know people. You know people that have walked away for less. You and I both know that. You know people that have been in less challenging situations, have faced smaller obstacles, and they've quit. And you can say, well, they did it, and I can do it too. But I'm telling you that they can also present you with a wonderful opportunity to endure, a wonderful chance to persevere, and that when you do, you will receive what God has promised. You will receive it. That's right there in his word. His promise still stands for you. He is still faithful, and you are still in his hands. And I think some of you today, some of you are way closer than you think to what God has promised you. You are way closer. I want to tell you again, you did not come this far to only come this far. And so I want to give you something to carry out with you as you go. I want to give you an anthem. If you are here and maybe you felt like, man, I'm going to quit. I'm going to quit. I've done everything I can. I can't keep going. I can't keep going like this. I want to give you words and a song to carry with you. And it's a song called Do It Again. We sang the bridge of it a little bit earlier. It's actually from Stephen Furtick's church, Elevation in Charlotte. It's incredible words. And for some of you, you might need to listen to this song every morning. You might need to start your day out with this. Some people might need to put it on repeat and listen to it the entire way to work. But to say, God, I know that you are with me. I know that you are faithful. You have not quit on me, and I am not going to quit. I'm going to choose to endure. So listen to these words. Tara will ask you to stand and sing with us in a little bit. And just let them fill your spirit with what is possible when we surrender ourselves to God.